Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open our show with details on the articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump just announced by the House Judiciary Committee. We'll have details on the offenses that the president is accused of and reactions to this major announcement on today's show. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have some top national and international news, including a major development in Britain impacting Brexit, concerns over President Trump's order to open up much of coastal California to oil drilling and fracking, and a rise in farm bankruptcies across the nation. Topping our local news, Congressman Duncan Hunter has announced plans to resign after the holidays, and one of his political opponents is calling for a presidential pardon of Hunter after the congressman's guilty plea. Plus, the House Ethics Committee has released its report with new revelations on Hunter's flamboyant spending habits involving campaign contributions spent on his personal lifestyle. The County Medical Examiner has a new report on the rise in methamphetamine deaths countywide, and we'll have details. The City of Lemon Grove has dropped its lawsuit over alleged campaign finance violations against Teresa Rosiak, a former council candidate and vocal council critic. In Poway, the water is safe to drink again, according to state testing, and now a local business group is asking residents countywide to come support Poway restaurants that were forced to shut down for days while a boil water order was in effect, so that you can help their employees have a Merry Christmas. On Crime Beat, El Cajon police are warning about a series of street robberies, plus hear about a collision involving deputies in Lakeside during a pursuit of an armed suspect. Food stamp cuts ordered by the Trump administration could affect hundreds of thousands of Californians, and we'll have details. County supervisors have changed ballot language on the Newland Sierra initiative to adopt wording that critics say favors a developer. Hear more on our show today. A fire in the Bostonia neighborhood in unincorporated El Cajon has displaced 23 residents. Plus, hear how changes in immigration rules are hurting children living in California, according to a California News Service report. And we'll take you on the road to Campo for the centennial of the Golden Spike Ceremony, commemorating the 100th anniversary of the railway line connecting San Diego and Imperial County. We'll have a little bit of country Christmas music for you on our show, as well as some holiday safety tips for your pets and some tips from the sheriff on how to keep your home safe if you're traveling over the holidays. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
The House Judiciary Committee has voted to send two articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump to the full House. The causes for impeachment listed are abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, including the president ordering the White House, executive branch agencies, and officials to defy subpoenas and withhold documents and records. Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler announced the adoption of the two impeachment articles Friday morning.
Today is a solemn and sad day. For the third time in a little over a century and a half, the House Judiciary Committee has voted articles of impeachment against the president for abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. The House will act expeditiously. Thank you.
In the history of the Republic, no president has ever ordered the complete defiance of an impeachment inquiry or sought to obstruct and impede so comprehensively the ability of the House of Representatives to investigate high crimes and misdemeanors, the Obstruction of Congress article of impeachment states, noting that federal agencies, including state, defense, and others, refused to produce a single document or record. Trump also banned witnesses from testifying. This abuse of office served to cover up the president's own repeated misconduct and to seize and control the power of impeachment and thus to nullify a vital constitutional safeguard vested solely in the House of Representatives, the article continues. The other impeachment article, for abuse of power, accuses Trump of conduct for corrupt purposes in pursuit of personal benefit that compromised the national security of the United States and undermined the integrity of the United States democratic process, also injuring the interests of the nation. Specifically, the article accuses Trump of soliciting interference in the 2020 election by pressuring the Ukraine to announce investigation of his rival's son, Hunter Biden, the son of Joe Biden. Trump suspended $381 million in military aid approved by Congress in a bipartisan vote to help Ukraine oppose Russian aggression. The vital military funds were withheld, along with a promised visit with the Ukrainian president at the White House, according to the article. Now, these articles were approved 23-17 on a party-line vote in the Judiciary Committee. The full House is expected to vote next week, which will mandate that a trial be held in the Senate early next year. If 2/3 of the senators present during the vote support impeachment, then Trump would be removed from office, and Vice President Mike Pence would finish out his term as president. But Mitch McConnell, Senate Pro Tem President of the Republican-controlled Senate, told Fox News there is no chance the president is going to be removed from office. Trump called the impeachment vote a sham, a hoax. Republicans on the Judiciary Committee focused largely on criticizing the process, not disproving the actual allegations. They faulted Democrats for relying in part on hearsay evidence, despite the fact that witnesses to the president's actions were prohibited by the president from testifying or turning over records in violation of lawfully issued subpoenas. A spokesperson for Vice President Pence called the testimony one-sided, the Washington Post reports, and the vice president's office adds, Democrats in Congress should heed the voice of the American people and reject this partisan impeachment that has been a complete waste of time. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Fisdeer. 2 years before Congressman Duncan Hunter and his wife Margaret were indicted on campaign finance violations, Washington ethics watchdogs had already found at least $45,000 in questionable spending. But the nonpartisan Office of Congressional Ethics kept its report secret at the request of federal investigators, as did the House Ethics Committee. This week, after Hunter pled guilty in the case, the confidential report has been released, Times of San Diego reports. The Office of Congressional Ethics reviewed thousands of pages of Hunter's financial, travel, and purchase records from 2009 to August 2016. Those expenditures occurred before a 2017 raid on Hunter's offices by the FBI. The report states the records indicate a consistent practice of misuse of campaign funds by Representative Hunter and his family. The Office of Congressional Ethics also found prevalent examples of FEC reports filed by the campaign committee that may contain materially false and misleading statements. The 50-page report was accompanied by 900 pages of documentary evidence. Among the revelations, Hunter's campaign spent $625 on 5 separate trips for Hunter's pet rabbit to fly aboard United Airlines in the cabin. The campaign also paid for 5 flights for Mrs. Hunter's mother to and from Chicago, as well as flights for the congressman's mother from San Diego to Florida and back. Hunter's campaign also footed the bill for the family's Cox TV, including premium channels, as well as high-speed internet. Other items charged to the campaign included the family's personal grocery bills, restaurant meals, video games, family vacations to Hawaii, Italy, Idaho, and Arizona, garage door repairs, children's dental work, school uniforms and tuition, merchandise purchased at Disneyland, and items purchased at Nordstrom and other retail establishments. After the Union Tribune first reported on Hunter's questionable spending, the campaign repaid some money, but the indictment ultimately accused the campaign of misusing over $250,000 on personal expenses. The House Ethics Committee, in a press statement, indicated that the Hunters, several staff members, and campaign associates refused to cooperate with congressional investigators. The Office of Congressional Ethics Board recommended issuing subpoenas to those who did not cooperate. Congressman Hunter has been stripped of voting rights by the House Ethics Committee since his guilty plea, and he has announced plans to resign after the holidays. He is scheduled for sentencing on March 17th. His wife, Margaret, is slated for sentencing on April 13th, each on one count of conspiring to misuse campaign funds for personal use. They could face up to 5 years in federal prison, as well as community service and fines of up to $250,000, the amount prosecutors accused the couple of looting from campaign funds.
Congressman Duncan Hunter Jr. has announced that he will resign after the holidays, a delay that critics say could prevent a special election and leave the seat vacant until January 2021 to be filled in the November 2020 election. Hunter is slated for sentencing in March after pleading guilty to one count of conspiracy to use campaign funds for personal use. He has been stripped of his rights to vote on legislation by the House Ethics Committee. He could face up to 5 years in prison plus $250,000 fine. Former Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican, has voiced support for President Donald Trump to pardon Hunter, telling the Union Tribune that commuting Hunter's sentence, quote, has a certain ability to balance the public good, end quote, by saving on prison costs. Soon after, former Congressman Duncan Hunter Sr. announced his support of Issa to fill his seat, raising questions over whether Issa agreed to a quid pro quo. Conservative talk show host Carl DeMaio, who is also running for the seat, opposes a pardon. Quote, it would not be appropriate because at some point we have to expect that our politicians are going to be held accountable for their mistakes, DeMaio told the San Diego Union-Tribune. State Senator Brian Jones, the third Republican in the race, has stayed neutral, indicating it is up to the president whether or not to intervene. Democratic contender Amar Campanijar, a former Obama administration staffer, said Hunter has done, quote, the right thing, end quote, by taking responsibility for his actions and pleading guilty. He added that for the president to exonerate Hunter after Hunter said he is willing to, quote, take the hit, end quote, by accepting a prison term, quote, wouldn't be a good precedent to set for either party. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Brexit supporters appear to have gained a major victory in UK elections Thursday. Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his Conservative Party won large majorities, according to exit polling, paving the way for Britain's exit from the European Union next year. Supporters of remaining in the EU had dreamed of a second referendum on the decision, which took place in June 2016. Since then, UK lawmakers have consistently failed to come to an agreement on how to withdraw from the EU. The victory is also seen as a major turn of events for a languishing Johnson, who is often compared to President Donald Trump. Starting today, immigration courts in New England can no longer detain undocumented immigrants in bond hearings without the government providing proof that they need to be detained. Laura Rosbrow-Tellum has more.
The ACLU in Massachusetts and New Hampshire filed a lawsuit in June on behalf of three people jailed after their detention hearings. But a Boston federal judge has ruled it's unconstitutional to make an immigrant prove that they aren't a danger to the community. The burden of proof is on the government accusing them. Matt Siegel, legal director of the ACLU of Massachusetts, explains the importance of this ruling.
Hundreds and over time, potentially thousands of people will have a better chance to be free, to be reunited with their families and communities while they battle their immigration cases.
This is the first class action ruling of its kind about civil immigration bond hearings in the United States. The federal decision also requires that New England immigration judges consider an individual's ability to pay if a bond amount is set higher than $1,500.
The Trump administration took the final step to allow oil and gas drilling on more than 1 million acres of federal public land in California's Central Coast and San Joaquin Valley on Thursday, despite a flood of public comment in opposition.
The Bureau of Land Management will now allow for new lease sales in 2020 on land that stretches across Fresno, Kern, Kings, Madera, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, Tulare, and Ventura counties. Rebecca August with the nonprofit Los Padres Forest Watch calls fracking a very toxic process.
Fracking certainly causes impacts to local water supplies, to air quality. There's a lot of associated truck traffic. There's toxic chemicals that are known to cause cancer that can be forced through water supplies.
August also complains that fracking wastewater creates a disposal issue and notes that drill sites emit methane, a potent greenhouse gas linked to climate change. The BLM's environmental impact study declared that fracking will pose no significant impacts to wildlife, water, public health, or the environment. I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is PNS. With a new decade just around the corner, farmers across the Midwest hope Mother Nature and economic conditions will bring relief by the spring of 2020.
The American Farm Bureau says South Dakota reported 13 farm bankruptcies in a 12-month period ending in September, compared with two in the previous 12-month period. Angel Casper with the nonprofit Ag United for South Dakota notes that 98% of the state's farms are family-owned. She says when weather extremes kept many from planting crops this year, some gave up rather than wait for another season.
South Dakota this year, especially with the weather, had 3.86 million unplanted acres of land, which is more than any other state, and some farms didn't get crops in at all.
In addition to weather problems, Casper says the rise in bankruptcies can be traced to low commodity prices and the trade wars, including the tariffs on China. Neighboring ag states also reported increases in farm bankruptcy. Nebraska had 37, Minnesota 31, and Iowa reported 24. The Farm Bureau says overall there were 24% more farm bankruptcies this year than last.
That was Roz Brown reporting. When prison technology company Global TechLink, or GTL, announced in October that it was providing hundreds of free electronic tablets for West Virginia prisons, it sounded like a compassionate gesture. But the program comes with a hitch.
People who use it have to pay 3 cents per minute to read ebooks on the tablets. That's even though the reading material comes from Project Gutenberg, a free online source, according to Lydia Welker with the Appalachian Prison Book Project, or APBP.
Permanent usage fees are an exploitative way for GTL to say they're providing free books while charging incarcerated people by the minute to read those books.
In a statement, GTL contends its tablet ebooks offer a supplement to facility libraries and that it's committed to providing secure technology solutions for the corrections industry to improve outcomes for people behind bars. I'm Diane Bernard.
During the busy holiday season, folks across the country will pause to remember fallen veterans as part of a national event. Mary Sherman reports from Missouri.
On Wreaths Across America Day, this Saturday, volunteers in all 50 states will place wreaths on veterans' headstones at more than 1,600 locations. 11 ceremonies are planned in Missouri, including at Higginsville Veterans Cemetery. David Meyer with the American Legion Riders 258 is organizing the event, which he says brings joy to veterans' families who sometimes feel their loved ones' sacrifices have been forgotten.
For the family members, they are just so happy. It's predominantly widows and the children of the veterans. They're really enthused that somebody is thinking about their loved one. They see a lot of hope that their loved one is always going to be remembered.
I'm Eric Tegedoff for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
483 San Diegans died due to methamphetamines last year, the highest rate ever for our region. That's the key finding of the San Diego County Methamphetamine Strike Force's latest report released by the County Medical Examiner. The prior record was set in 2016 when 377 meth fatalities were reported. Diane Jacob, chairwoman of the County Board of Supervisors, says meth abuse is not a new problem, but these latest figures from the Meth Strike Force report card are deeply disturbing and should raise alarm among all of us. These tragic deaths are unnecessary and avoidable. Most of the meth deaths occurred in people between ages 45 and 64, many with chronic cardiovascular disease, which may have resulted from long-time meth abuse. The 2019 meth report card also shows there were nearly 13,000 emergency room visits due to methamphetamines in 2017. Data from 2018 won't be available until next year. Over 6,900 people were admitted to county-funded treatment programs due to meth abuse last year versus around 4,900 in 2017. The rise is believed to be the result of program Drug Medi-Cal, which went into effect in July 2018 and increased access to treatment facilities countywide. The report found a strong link between meth use and crime. 57% of adult arrestees tested positive for meth in 2018. Over 10,000 arrests were made last year for selling and possession of meth in our region. San Diego County District Attorney Summer Steffen, a tri-chair of the Methamphetamine Strike Force, says her office will continue to combat this epidemic through prosecution of meth dealers who prey on the addicted, along with strengthening treatment options to help keep people out of the criminal justice system. San Diego County has had a long history with meth problems. While our region is no longer considered the meth capital of the world, since little meth is produced locally now, there is more meth available, and it is more potent and cheaper than ever. Today, most methamphetamine in San Diego County is coming from Mexico. The highly addictive and deadly drug is being sent from south of the border and smuggled into the U.S. by Mexican drug cartels. According to the Drug Enforcement Administration, meth seizures at U.S.-Mexico ports of entry increased by nearly 40% in 2018. Over half of all methamphetamine seized along the border in 2018 occurred in the San Diego area. With availability going up and prices coming down, meth is having more negative consequences in San Diego families and communities. Nick Macchione, director of the County Health and Human Services Agency, says, "There is help available. Treatment saves lives. We have expanded treatment programs throughout the region so people struggling with addiction can get on the road to recovery," he adds. The county funds residential and outpatient treatment programs across the region to help people recover from addiction and improve their overall health. Treatment resources are available by calling the county's Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240 or by calling 211. People who want to anonymously report meth or drug activity are encouraged to call the meth hotline at 877-NO-TO-METH. Or visit www.notometh.org. That's no, the number 2, meth.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Gene Carpenter.
The city of Lemon Grove has dropped a lawsuit against Teresa Rosiak over three alleged misdemeanor campaign finance and disclosure violations. The Fair Political Practices Commission, or FPPC, had already closed its investigation with no disciplinary action. Rosiak told us, "This case was a travesty for the taxpayers of Lemon Grove," noting that the city manager has acknowledged that the city spent at least $3,000 pursuing the case after Rosiak refused to settle it for $500. She says her public defender asked many times for the bill of particulars, which is the detailed description of the charges, and the city never supplied it. She calls that another negligent act by the Lemon Grove city attorney, since everyone has the right to information or discovery when they're being charged with crimes. Rosiak stated in her email, "I am so thankful that justice prevailed, and I hope the harassment will cease and desist." Rosiak, a fiscal conservative and frequent critic of the council, has contended that the suit was politically motivated. The city of Lemon Grove confirmed in a records request from our organization that it had no record of suing any other past candidates for similar alleged violations in the last 10 years. Public defender Leslie O'Brien told Rosiak that Lemon Grove legal counsel Gary Shans has indicated the case was dismissed because the city revised its campaign finance code. However, the attorneys indicated the city has reserved the right to refer the matter to the FPPC for further review. Reporting for East County Magazine in Lemon Grove, this is Miriam Raftery.
A boil water order has been lifted in Poway, where residents can now drink tap water. The week-long order was issued after residents reported cloudy water from their taps. The problem was caused by stormwater runoff. The State Water Resources Control Board found the city out of compliance due to proximity of a storm drain to a Clearwell reservoir. A press release issued by Poway states that the notice came as a shock to the city, since in over 50 years that the facility has been operating and regularly inspected by the state, the city has never been made aware of the compliance issue. The city says it has secured the stormwater outlet to prevent any future backflow problems and has disinfected and refilled the Clearwater Reservoir. Water agencies from around the region sent staff to help Poway with this effort. Poway provided free bottled water to residents during the incident, though local tests found no health issues. Now, state testing confirms the water is safe to drink. Hardest hit are restaurants that were forced to shut down for up to a week due to the water concerns, leaving owners without revenues and workers without pay just before the holidays. The North San Diego Business Chamber of Commerce is asking people from across San Diego County to help out by dining out at Poway restaurants this week to show support and help employees have a brighter holiday season. You can find a list of Poway restaurants on the North San Diego Business Chamber's website. Reporting for East County Magazine in Poway, this is Jonathan Getz.
State Senate President Tony Atkins is warning that a tightening of work rules by the Trump administration could end food assistance for 700,000 people in California. The new rules, which take effect April 1st, will affect adults who are childless and not disabled. Under current rules, these people must work 20 hours a week for at least 3 months over a 3-year period to qualify for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, commonly known as food stamps. California and other states have been able to create waivers to this rule in the past for areas that face high unemployment, but the new Trump policy will end that. Atkins called the Trump administration announcement to end food stamps to up to 700,000 Californians cruel and inhumane. She adds, the proposed rule ignores the local needs of Californians and removes state flexibility currently allowed under existing law and guidance as it relates to able-bodied adults. Agricultural Secretary Sonny Perdue said the rule change was prompted by a buoyant economy that needs more workers. He says, now, in the midst of the strongest economy in a generation, we need everyone who can work to work. This rule lays the groundwork for the expectation that able-bodied Americans re-enter the workforce where there are currently more job openings than people to fill them. But that logic assumes that anyone who wants a job can find one, ignoring issues such as age discrimination, language or education barriers, and people in rural areas or on Native American reservations who may lack transportation to get to urban areas with jobs. Atkins, a Democrat who represents the San Diego area, says the rule change will simply exacerbate hunger and homelessness. The outcome of this reckless decision will make it harder for adults on the brink of homelessness to get the food they need, and is the latest in a series of federal decisions to limit access to food for impoverished families across America, she states. The only result of such a decision is that more Americans will go hungry. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Gerald Stevenson.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with a Crime Beat report. The El Cajon Police Department is warning the public about a rise in street robberies, some targeting elderly men. The robberies have occurred near the 1000 block of East Main Street and the 800 block of Buena Terrace in recent weeks. All of the victims were walking alone on public sidewalks when they were assaulted from behind by a lone suspect and robbed, says Lieutenant Randy Sillard. None of the victims reported seeing a weapon. At this time, it is unknown if these crimes are related. The suspect descriptions vary. Suspects have been described as either African American, Hispanic, or Middle Eastern men between 20 and 40 years old, between 5'6" and 6 feet tall and weighing around 160 to 180 pounds. The El Cajon Police Department is asking for the community's help in solving these crimes. Anyone with information regarding these crimes or suspects involved are asked to call the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311 or San Diego Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. You can also leave tips anonymously online at sdcrimestoppers.org. The police department is advising people walking in the area, especially during the holidays, to travel in groups in well-lighted areas that are highly visible to others, avoid carrying large amounts of cash, and have a cell phone to report emergencies or crimes in progress by calling 911. Always be aware of your surroundings and report anything suspicious to the police.
Sheriff's deputies in Lakeside got a call reporting a man in a vehicle holding a gun on Marilla Drive last Wednesday night about 5:30 p.m. When deputies arrived, the suspect fled at a high rate of speed and a pursuit ensued. The suspect ran a stop sign and then hit a civilian vehicle but kept going. According to Sergeant Amber Reeves with the Sheriff's Department, the suspect then came to an abrupt stop in the middle of Lakeshore Drive, causing the pursuing deputies to collide with each other as well as with the suspect vehicle. A gun, ammunition, and narcotic drugs were found in the suspect's vehicle. He was taken into custody and identified as 24-year-old Sean Orr. The civilian was treated at the scene by medical staff. A deputy was taken to a hospital as a precaution but was not injured, according to Sergeant Scott Hill. The other deputy and the suspect were also uninjured. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
Over 100,000 San Diego County residents signed a petition opposing the controversial Newland Sierra housing development approved by supervisors. Those signatures qualified an initiative to appear on the March 2020 ballot to let voters decide whether or not to allow the massive project. But after the developer, Newland Communities, threatened legal action against the county if neutral wording wasn't changed, supervisors voted 3-2 to adopt ballot language changes nearly identical to changes demanded by the developer. The action angered environmentalists and members of planning groups opposed to the project, who only learned of the proposed changes when the matter showed up on an agenda days before the November 19th vote. Supervisors earlier met twice in secret closed-door meetings, first voting down the changes 3-2. But then Supervisor Greg Cox changed his mind, joining with Kristen Gaspar and Jim Desmond to approve the developer-backed wording. Both Gaspar and Desmond have taken campaign contributions from Newland. Supervisors Diane Jacob and Nathan Fletcher voted against changing the ballot initiative language. Jacob stated that she has never seen anything like this before in her 27 years on the board, according to Coast News Group. Fletcher objected to changing language based on polling done by Newland Sierra after learning from County Council that opponents were not consulted on the change. Fletcher believes the language is now biased in favor of Newland Sierra. Desmond disagrees, stating, "This is reasonable ballot language that explains what the heck you're voting on," the Union Tribune reports. The original language, all sides agree, was neutral but confusing. It asked voters whether or not a county general plan amendment and Newland Sierra project should be approved, but included a lengthy technical description. The new language shortens the technical description but goes further, adding a description of the county's original plan and the latest proposal. It states that the county's existing general plan would allow only 99 homes and up to 2 million square feet of commercial space, alone with open space. By contrast, the plan approved by supervisors would allow Newland Sierra to build a planned community of 2,135 homes, a school site, 81,000 square feet of retail, 36 acres of park, and 1,209 acres of open space. No on Newland Sierra campaign spokesman Rick Scholos blasted the supervisors' action. He says Newland's request to change the language was politically motivated to boost their chances at the polls in March. No amount of wordsmithing can hide what Newland Sierra truly is, a sprawl development in a high fire risk area with no affordable housing that will add almost 29,000 cars to the freeway every day, he adds. The opponents note that the Miriam Mountain area, where the project would be built west of Interstate 15 and north of Deer Springs Road, is also a critical corridor for wildlife. They also voice concern over limited evacuation routes, which could pose danger during wildfire evacuation. The Newland Sierra project is opposed by the League of Women Voters, by major environmental groups including Sierra Club, Cleveland National Forest Foundation, 350.org, California Native Plant Society, Center for Biological Diversity, San Diego Audubon Society, and others. Several community planning groups in the area include those from Twin Oaks Valley, Bonsall, and Hidden Meadows have also voted to oppose Newland Sierra. But the campaign in favor of Newland Sierra calls it the better choice for the development of private property just off I-15 next to the cities of Escondido, San Marcos, and Vista, land that will be developed one way or another. It claims that over 60% of the homes will be affordably priced for working families and that over 60% of the property will be preserved as open space. Those in favor include the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce, the San Marcos Chamber of Commerce, as well as North County mayors from San Marcos, Escondido, Vista, and Poway. Other supporters include the North County Association of Realtors and unions representing CAL FIRE firefighters and the Deputy Sheriff's Association, which have stated the housing is needed for their members. Only about 10% of the project is reportedly reserved for people earning less than the county median income. Opponents of the measure are considering legal action to potentially ask courts to change the language yet again before ballots are printed for the March election. But ballot language won't be the only thing many voters are likely to see before making up their minds how to vote. Both sides are expected to spend substantial sums on mailers, flyers, advertising, and social media campaigns seeking to educate voters countywide on their perspectives for and against this controversial Newland Sierra measure. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
If you see smoke over East County in the next few weeks, it may be a controlled burn. The California Department of Parks and Recreation, in cooperation with CAL FIRE and other agencies, will be conducting prescribed burns and pile burns in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park between December 16th and April 30th. These burns are intended to reduce the chance of a catastrophic wildfire by lowering hazardous fuel loads, but the program also includes reforestation, restoring soil nutrients, and long-term improving watersheds and wildlife habitat, according to CAL FIRE. The prescribed burns are being planned with the San Diego Air Pollution Control District to minimize smoke impacts on surrounding communities. All burning depends on weather and air quality conditions that are favorable for smoke dispersal. If conditions are not conducive for burning, the burns will be rescheduled. Some public trails near the burn area may be closed. Fire suppression equipment will be staged in the vicinity, and people traveling near the fire burn areas may see smoke from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the day of the burn or smell smoke as they pass through the area for up to 6 days after the active burning. Prescribed burns produce significantly less smoke than a wildfire does, of course. However, if you see or smell smoke in your surroundings, county health officials recommend avoiding strenuous outdoor activity and remaining indoors as much as possible. These precautions are especially important for children, the elderly, and people with respiratory or heart conditions. Fire officials also ask the public to please use extreme caution when driving near prescribed fire operations due to fire personnel and equipment in the area. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A fire at the Bradley condominiums in the Bostonia community of unincorporated El Cajon on Sunday, December 8th, has displaced 23 residents and damaged 9 units, according to Lakeside Fire Battalion Chief Andy Lawler. The first firefighters on the scene from San Miguel Fire and Rescue saw light smoke and believe the fire started between walls. It quickly spread to adjacent units and the roof. Chief Lawler indicated that a construction worker soldering plumbing pipes may have sparked the blaze. Firefighters from Lakeside, Santee, and Heartland also provide a mutual aid response. Some residents reported water damage from a broken pipe. Flooding, in addition to a power shutoff, smoke and fire damage led to the evacuation of many households in the building. Working in the dark, firefighters had to break down some doors to evacuate people and fight the flames. Some residents used towels and dishwater to help douse the fires in their units. One man reportedly suffered burned hands before the blaze was finally extinguished. The Red Cross has been assisting those evacuated. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Gerald Stevenson.
1.3 million California children younger than age 5 may lose out on essential services because of a hostile immigration climate, according to a new report. Researchers from two children's advocacy groups found that the Trump administration's anti-immigrant policies and heightened law enforcement have had major impacts on children up to age 5. Andrea Lopez is with Para Los Niños, which runs Head Start child care centers in Los Angeles. She says families are dropping out of crucial programs for fear of being deported.
That's been the most heart-wrenching thing for us, is seeing their struggle and the fear that has been embedded in them.
Lopez says many families are refusing all forms of public assistance, even for their American citizen children, mistakenly believing that this would be held against them when applying for residency. President Donald Trump has said his policies are designed to reinforce the rule of law and save taxpayer dollars. Myra Alvarez is with the Children's Partnership, one of two nonprofits that co-authored the report. She says many kids are suffering, terrified that their parents won't be there when they get home from school.
The kids are becoming more aggressive. There's also greater separation anxiety, social withdrawal, being more stressed out as a result of this environment.
Patricia Lozano is with Early Edge California, which also co-authored the report. She encourages state policymakers to pass a law that declares preschools and daycare centers off limits to immigration officers, something already in place at K-12 schools in the state.
Early childhood programs should be safe places for families, and the providers and teachers need the support to provide the right resources to face this hostile environment.
California demonstrated its commitment to early childhood programs by allocating funds in the new state budget to train home visitors from the CalWORKS program on ways to blunt the impact of federal immigration policies and help families connect to needed services. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news across our border region.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
A centennial celebration for the San Diego and Arizona Railway was held on November 16th at the Campo Railroad Park and Museum. The 148-mile route between San Diego and El Centro included 44 miles through Baja California in Mexico. The rail line was built as a collaboration between John D. Spreckles and the Southern Pacific Railroad. It was plagued by so many setbacks that it became known as the Impossible Railway. Flooding, fires, financial troubles, tunnel collapses, and attacks by Mexican revolutionaries all interrupted the massive construction project through rugged terrain in San Diego's East County. So did World War I, which shut down railway construction nationwide due to steel needed for the war effort. So Spreckles traveled to Washington, D.C., convincing the power brokers there to allow completion of the line. 100 years ago, John D. Spreckles drove in a golden spike to complete the final link just 4 days after Armistice Day ended World War I. That historic event was recreated on November 16, 2016 at the Centennial, where around 500 people turned out to hear from dignitaries and actors portraying historical figures. Master of Ceremonies Walter Ritter spoke on the significance of the line and all those who toiled to make the dream become a reality.
Completion of the San Diego and Arizona Railway, the impossible railroad to immortalize the work of not just its big man, its president, Mr. John D. Spreckles, but also the countless citizens of the United States and Mexico who dreamed, surveyed, tunneled, spanned, toiled, sweated, and even died to directly link the unparalleled harbor of the sun to the fertile Imperial Valley and the industries of America's Point East.
Supervisor Diane Jacob recalled traveling the full length of the rail line in her youth. It was quite a ride, she told the audience. She also spoke about the county's contributions to support the museum and expand the railway park to preserve Camp Lockett, a former military base that once housed a Japanese prisoner of war camp during World War I, and that was the last station of the Buffalo Soldiers, the all-black Civil War Cavalry Brigade.
That's older than me, too.
And the railroad has been called the Impossible Railroad for a very good reason. It was a huge challenge to build, and it's been a huge challenge to maintain over the years. But the Pacific Southwest Railroad Museum Association keeps making the impossible possible, thanks to its dedicated and a lot of hardworking, an army of volunteers that are out there. I salute you. In San Diego County, folks always talk about our beaches and bays and our zoo, but our backcountry is full of many, many treasures too. And this rail line and museum are among our best. I have to also add that over the last 20 years, not only have I talked the talk in supporting the rail line, but the County Board of Supervisors has donated roughly $420,000 of county money to enhance and build and to support the volunteers here at this museum. That is no small piece of change, and I will continue to do that. In addition to that, recently the county also conveyed about 100 acres of county property to the museum as a part of a renewal plan for Camp Lockett. Wasn't easy to do, but we did it to preserve Camp Lockett for future generations. Yeah, I think that deserves a lot of applause.
Members of the Buffalo Soldiers San Diego chapter were honored at the centennial celebration that was also attended by Cindy Wang, who came to commemorate Chinese immigrants who helped to build America's railway lines. Through the years, natural disasters, tunnel collapses, and destruction of tracks in Mexico shut down the line, but visitors can still ride a vestige of that historic railway at the museum in Campo. At the centennial event, Manuel Hernandez with the Baja California Railroad revealed exciting plans are moving forward to restore the binational line, first to freight and later to passenger service, thanks in part to a new border station soon to open in Campo, driving demand.
The city of Tecate and the state of Baja California is very, very interested in getting that train running, being the first truly binational tourist train going from Tecate to Campo.
Diana Hyatt, president of the museum, predicted, if ever the desert line does reopen, we firmly believe the natural wonder, now so hidden from the public, could be one of the top scenic rail tourism destinations on our continent, and with it bring vital business to the backcountry communities of our region. The San Diego City Guard Band, which performed at the 1919 ceremony, once again played at the centennial, including the San Diego Progress March, a piece written for the opening of the San Diego and Arizona Railway. And here's a bit of their music. Calliope also played, adding to the festive atmosphere as the train whistle blew amid the fanfare. Next up, actor Jake Schaible portrayed John D. Spreckles, reenacting Mr. Spreckles' speech from a century ago.
And I realized that if this road was to be completed, that it would be the best thing that could happen, as it would form the last of the transcontinental lines, something that otherwise might not have ever happened to the city of San Diego. Now, I've been accused by some of the speakers of being a versatile man, but I tell you, I'm not a talker that some of those connected with the railroad are, especially our general manager. I'm more or better at action. I never did get very far with talking. There was a time when my nickname was Serious John. I was serious in all my undertakings. But at times I just went along with the general manager and I picked him up on various things in reference to the road. Now after the road, I have to go still further. If I don't start pretty soon, the sun will go down and Well, that means I'll be unable to hit the...
And with that, the actor portraying Spreckles took a swing at a replica of the golden spike, missing it first, true to historical accuracy, and then driving in the golden spike, completing the last link of the Transcontinental Railway as the crowd roared with approval and descendants of the Spreckles family looked on.
Oh. Well, it sure made it look easy. Yeah.
There it goes in. Thanks, John D.
Reporting for East County Magazine in Campo, this is Miriam Raftery.
And now we hope our readers will enjoy this excerpt from a U.S. Army Band Christmas concert back in 2009. It's got a little bit of country in it for our East County listeners.
To deck the halls for the holiday season, but some holiday decorations can pose safety hazards for your cat or dog. So San Diego County's Animal Service Department is offering these tips to protect your pet. Keep pets away from mistletoe, holly, and poinsettias since these are toxic to animals. Consider using artificial holiday plants instead. Chocolate is toxic to pets, so keep stockings with chocolate treats out of reach, as well as any chocolate cookies you might leave out for Santa. Anchor your Christmas tree so pets can't tip it over. Clear fishing twine tied to the top of the tree and secured to a ceiling or wall is a simple way to keep your tree standing and protect your ornaments too. Never use tree preservatives in water in your Christmas tree stand since this can be deadly if cats or dogs drink it. Cats love to play with tinsel and curling ribbon, but then they'll try to eat it. Tinsel is toxic and ribbon can obstruct your pet's intestinal tract. So keep these items away from curious critters. Hide electrical cords from your pets and make sure they can't play with or knock over any candles. Many dogs and cats get overwhelmed with all the hustle and bustle of the holidays, so having a quiet room allows them to escape and sleep undisturbed. On New Year's Eve, loud booms from fireworks can scare your canine companion. Some dogs will jump over fences to escape the noise. They run for miles and become lost. So set aside a safe, quiet place and be sure your dog is wearing identification just in case. Microchip both dogs and cats, since they slip out the door unnoticed while you're busy greeting holiday visitors. And if someone finds your lost pet, a vet's office or shelter can scan for a microchip and you can easily be reunited. County Animal Service offers low-cost microchipping every Tuesday through Sunday, which includes national registration. You can also sign up for Finding Rover and upload a photo of your pet using your computer or smartphone. This free service uses facial recognition to help lost and found dogs be reunited with their owners. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Shardé Fontenot.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Going away for the holidays? Are you concerned about your home security while you're away? If you live in the jurisdiction of the Sheriff's Department, you can fill out a form online and submit it to your nearest sheriff's station or substation. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department will keep a watchful eye on your home during your holiday travels. The Sheriff's Senior Volunteer Patrol, with more than 400 members, will perform security inspections outside your home while you are out of town year-round. And you can ask for this free service simply by letting the Sheriff's Department know when you are leaving by completing a vacation check form at www.sdsheriff.net and return it to your nearest sheriff station or substation. Let the sheriff know when you're leaving, and the senior volunteer patrol members will check your doors, windows, and garage are locked. They will also hide your newspapers and packages in your side fence or back patio. If they see anything suspicious, they will call for assistance of a deputy, who will determine if there's been a break-in. Upon your return from vacation, you will get a welcome home letter listing the dates your home was checked and observations made during the visits. So again, to take advantage of this free service, complete this vacation check form at www.sdsheriff.net and return it to your nearest sheriff station or substation.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.